This is 89.1 WEMU, and I'm David Fair. And the streets across Michigan, the country, and the globe are alive with protests against police brutality, racism, and injustice. While these gatherings stem from a series of particular incidents, the systemic nature of racism has tentacles that spread through all aspects of life in America, including environmental injustice. Lisa Wozniak is executive director of the Michigan League of Conservation Voters and my co-host for WEMU's First Friday Focus on the Environment. Today, we're going to look more broadly at the environment in which we live right now, and thank you for the time, Lisa.
It's always good to be here, Dave. Our guest today is State Representative Sarah Anthony, and Representative Anthony represents the 68th House District, which is in the Lansing-Ingham County area. And during her first term of office, which she's in right now, Representative Anthony has truly proven to be a champion for civil rights, higher education, environment, and public health issues. And full disclosure, Representative Anthony is a former member of our board at the Michigan League of Conservation Voters.
Well, welcome to the show, Representative Anthony. We appreciate the time.
Thank you for having me.
So, Representative Anthony, you were born and raised, as I believe, in Lansing. And I would love to know, as a black woman, what were your formative experiences related to race and gender as you grew up in Michigan?
Yeah. So, growing up, Lansing is a relatively diverse community. We have a little bit of everything in Lansing. But in my, very nuclear family and in my neighborhood, majority African-American. And so oftentimes I say that I understood my gender before I understood my race. And I mean that to say that I was treated differently as a woman. But as an African-American, there was always just kind of a camaraderie and understanding of our culture. But along the way, as, you kind of go out into the world, you really start to see the differences in the way you're treated, the way the world views you. And, I feel like I'm going to spend a lifetime trying to disarm all of the things that kind of build on you as a woman and as a woman of color. Oftentimes I say when I, walk into a room, I feel as though I have to disarm myself to make others feel comfortable, right? To make sure that they know, that I have degrees, that I'm qualified, that I'm supposed to be at that proverbial table. And a lot of that stems from, just obviously systemic racism, but just those embedded experiences that come from being African-American, regardless of the space that you're in, as diverse as some of them may be.
How much of that personal experience played into your decision to enter public service?
A lot, right? So, both of my parents have always been very active in our community and community organizations, in the labor movement, in the NAACP. And so I've always known that whatever I decided to do, there was going to be a social justice agenda or a lens in which I would view the work. And I always envisioned myself coming back to my community to serve and knowing that there were going to be these large gaps in resources, in justice that I would have to address, I think has played a huge part in knowing that I wanted to go into public service, but also knowing that me as a public servant is going to look much different. One of the things I was talking to my coworkers about on the House floor yesterday was the fact that, many of my colleagues who are not people of color can just go in and do the job, can just think through policy and, negotiate legislation and work across the aisle and get, things done. But for someone like me, I also need to be a community leader. I have to, in many ways, be a spokesperson for African Americans and always kind of carry the water and carry the weight for an entire group of people. And knowing how I have to do that, also with the backdrop of many of the images of police brutality and deaths of folks who look like me, can also just be very heavy. And it adds another layer that many folks just don't have to contend with who serve in these public positions.
WEMU's First Friday Focus on the Environment continues with Lisa Wozniak of the Michigan League of Conservation Voters and 68th District State Representative Sarah Anthony. Earlier this week, Representative Anthony, on NPR, they were talking with a pastor on the matter of institutionalized racism. And the pastor said, and I'm paraphrasing here, the system is not broken. It's functioning exactly as it's designed to do. His meaning was that the system is designed to oppress people of color and allow for legal, procedural, and policy injustices. For all the opportunities that have presented in the past that we did not fully take, what about this place and time can be different in changing the system?
That's right. And I completely agree with that, Pastor. You know, there is something very different about this moment in our history. And I think that folks are starting to feel this time being different. And the thing that many of us in leadership positions, not just elected leadership, but folks who, you know, are clergy members, who lead nonprofit organizations, anyone who has a platform, it feels different. And folks are trying to capitalize on the moment to say, okay, so how are we going to make this real? How in my sphere of influence, right, be it my neighborhood association or my organization or even just my family and friends, how am I going to move the needle on this stuff? And I think we all have a role to play. And everyone's role is going to look a little bit different, but it's going to take work because to that pastor's point, this is systemic. There are things that are structural that are designed to oppress people like me. And despite the fact that folks like me have kind of been able to navigate the system, it's not because of the system, it's in spite of this system. And so I think that there's a lot of work that each of us can be doing, but it's going to take some real work and authentic work if we're actually going to move the needle this time.
So I was talking with a wonderful, talented young man the other day, and he made an incredibly important point. He said, you know, water shutoffs and leaving families without running water is a form of violence, and again, mostly against African Americans in the state. He pointed out that heavy industry belching toxins into the air disproportionately, again, in mostly black and brown neighborhoods, is a form of violence. What do you think it's going to take for our state elected officials to aggressively address these issues and treat them more like the public health threats that they are?
That's right. I think it's going to take a groundswell of the people, right? So, you know, we're seeing protests across the state, across the country. We're seeing this energy. And I will tell you that our elected officials are missing it. They are missing the point. They are not hearing from the people that sent them into office. You know, you're right, Lisa, that people of color disproportionately are impacted by these issues, right? And, you know, I've been thinking about that whole term, you know, that I can't breathe. And whether we're talking about police brutality or we're talking about some of our most polluted zip codes in the state of Michigan and across the state that are in black neighborhoods, there is a complete disconnect between the people who are making those decisions and the people who are bearing the brunt of the impact of climate change and polluted air and, you know, water that we don't trust when it comes out of our tap. And so I think that there is going to need to be a renewed interest and a renewed focus from the public. The only way I think any of this is going to change if there's a groundswell of men and women across the state who are just saying enough, and whether we have to vote out these elected officials or, you know, organize from the ground up, we have to do what we have to do, because at the end of the day, our literal lives are on the line. It literally is a matter of life and death.
And with that in mind, one of the actions on part of Governor Gretchen Whitmer in response to the disproportionate impact of COVID-19 on African Americans is the creation of the Racial Disparities Task Force. It's chaired by Lieutenant Governor Garland Gilchrist. What do you hope will be the result of the task force work, not only for COVID-19, but beyond and into these systemic issues?
You know, I think that task force are always interesting, right? I think that it is good to bring out experts from all sectors and all points and parts of the community and parts of the state in order to study issues, to bring issues to the forefront. But I have been around not a whole lot of time in public service, but what I do know is that recommendations from task force are only as good as the men and women who are in power to take those recommendations and bring them to power. I've seen too many studies put on a shelf. I've seen too many great recommendations put on the back burner until the next election. And so unless the men and women who have these titles are ready to step up and to actually do something with these types of recommendations, I think that our society is at a point that we're over it, that we are done with, you know, words, and we need more action. And so I'm hopeful that hopefully this time is different, that when we do see these recommendations, there's courage from all of us, from the executive, from the legislative branch, from local communities who have elected officials and community members who need to do things differently. But I think that I'm speaking for a lot of folks when we are just flat out over the rhetoric and over the gestures and the political posturing. Enough is enough, because, again, lives are on the line.
Representative Anthony, we know that the state budget, given the economic downturn due to the pandemic, is going to be a major, major tug of war in Lansing. They're going to have to be huge cuts made, unless there's additional federal aid, which, of course, many people are working on. State budgets are documents that speak to priorities. And so as we think about the challenges before us, and when it comes to these priorities, where do you think the two sides will disagree most, and where will there be agreement to address some of the systemic racism, to the environmental injustices? Where do you see this going?
You know, I mean, I always say budgets are moral documents, right? You show me where you're sending the money, and I'll show you where your heart is, where your priorities are. And, you know, we are starting to have some of the conversations about where we're putting federal dollars and state dollars. And, you know, I think there's going to be some fundamental differences. You know, my approach has always been to not only reach across the aisle, but to also try to appeal to people's humanity, right? When you talk about, you know, air and water quality, that is a human rights issue. When you talk about cleaning up PFAS and the green ooze that is on some of our areas in our state, that is a human issue, right? And the fact that I don't think that many folks, particularly on the Republican side of the aisle, see those priorities as human rights issues, I think is going to be a challenge. You know, many of us have been pretty consistent about saying, you know, we need to be empowering, you know, whether it's Eagle or other government, you know, departments to ensure that there's oversight and that there's proper resources to do the real work to ensure that we're addressing these issues. Some of us have been very, very clear of that. But as resources become, you know, more and more scarce, I think it's going to be about, again, holding people accountable to what matters to us. And again, some of these issues are so fundamental to the role of government and fundamental to what we all should believe are core values. I think it's a no-brainer for those of us who believe in human rights and civil rights. And I hope that we can make the case on both sides of the aisle. But it is going to be a fight this year.
Final question as our time together winds down. We are heading into an August primary election to be followed by the November general elections. There are many who believe that regardless of what turnout is and how people vote, the system is so broken, it doesn't make a difference. How do you address that?
So I am always going to be an optimist. I believe that this system is only as good as the people that step up and try to change that system. And, you know, the day that we are all, you know, equal in this country is when we all get our one vote. And I do believe that we have the ability to empower people or kick folks out who do not share our values. And so I do believe that this election and every election is really critical. But I think that this one feels very different. And I'm working actively to try to translate all of those protesters who, you know, are so passionate about this issue and about this moment, and making sure that there is a direct correlation between the protest and the ballot box. And so I am not jaded. I am encouraged by what I'm seeing across the country, and I'm praying that that translates to real change up and down the ticket.
Representative Anthony, thank you for your time and for both your personal and professional perspective today. We do appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
That is 68th District State Representative Sarah Anthony, our guest on WEMU's First Friday Focus on the Environment. And a thanks to my partner and co-host, Lisa Wozniak. She's the Executive Director of the Michigan League of Conservation Voters. And Lisa, we'll talk again in July.
I will look forward to it, David. Thank you.
I'm David Fair, and this is 89.1 WEMU-FM and WEMU HD1 Ypsilanti.